Hi everybody, it's Chris here from the Gallagate Shots YouTube channel. Just to let you know, as always, this podcast is now part of the 90 Minute Football Network and proudly sponsored by www.pt-4-u.co.uk. Enjoy the episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Always Smiling Faces podcast on the Gallagate Shot YouTube channel. Lockdown all over again. We're back recording from home. We couldn't afford to pay rent on the studio this month, so we're not there. How are you doing, boys? Is good?
I hope you're lying about the last remark, I hope.
No. So yes, well, tonight we've decided to record from home. As you can see, it's Mark here, Decker here. Bestie couldn't make it, but wishing you well, Bestie, as always, mate. Mark, how are you? You good?
I'm good, yeah, not bad at all. Could have been better. Could have been here celebrating some, you know, a victory or something like that. But, you know, this is Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah. Decker, all festive. This one. And we didn't set Decker up. Decker decided to dress like this. We didn't set him up.
Yeah. I'm glad you got that in, actually. Yes. No, I just thought, you know what it is? If you kind of be festive on the last episode before Christmas, when can you be? But I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. And you know what it is? I think I'm going to be quite positive tonight as well, actually, about the performance. So I'm just interested. I haven't spoke to you at all about it. So I'm interested to see your thoughts as well.
Yeah, Mark, I'm going to let you lead in with it, mate. If you just want to go through the likes of the starting lineup and things like that for us, mate, because there's a few shouts here saying that my audio isn't great. So I'll let you two take over just for a moment.
Trying to test my memory here, like, aren't you? Seem to forget I had a few beverages yesterday, but yeah, there was a few changes for the game, wasn't there?
Do you want us to see the starting lineup for you, Mark?
If you've got it there, I can remember. Obviously, Clark came in, Richie came in.
That's correct.
Yeah, changes in midfield as well with Saint was rested in favour of Fraser.
Well, you would have been happy about Saint not starting, so that would have gotten you off to the Christmas spirit. Obviously Shelby missing.
Yeah,
which I wasn't expecting. Which obviously Hayden came in and played alongside Willock in centre midfield. I think probably the glaring thing for a lot of people was the back four. Well, it was for me, and I certainly went on Twitter and seen that, where you've got Jacob Murphy, Lascelles, Clark and Richie is the back four. It scares the hell out of me, to be honest. I think, especially against the opposition you're going up against, it's going to be tough no matter what. But that is a dreadful back four, in all fairness. And I don't mean to disrespect any of them as individuals. I'm sure they're great people, but it's dreadful, isn't it, at this level, to have that back four.
Well, I mean, we've seen it week in, week out, haven't we, with the times that Clark's been in there, and obviously we've had with discussions about Lascelles in recent weeks as well, and seeing those two at the centre. Obviously, we knew Lewis had picked up that injury in the last game, so it was probably expected that we would have seen Matt Ritchie back in at left back, where we know he's trying to do a job there, albeit in not what is his position. Mankiw missing again, and Murphy in at that right back. I did wonder whether we were going to see a back five, in all honesty, and maybe drop Isaac Hayden into there. But from the off, we just went with the four, with Hayden and Willock as the centre two in front of them.
I think there's certain things where, obviously, we've expected when Howe comes in to be a little bit more, maybe aggressive a little bit more, on the front foot or forward thinking. But there is certain games I think us as fans can understand if we go to five at the back. You know, we kind of understand and that it might work. And this was one of them for me. I thought, given some of the injuries that we had, and there was obviously rumours that Fernandez, obviously he was out as well still, I still thought would go to the five. I really did. But he stuck with the four, and it is what it is, isn't it?
Do you think it's a bit strange, the whole, I know we're touching on something that we've already covered plenty, but the whole thing with Fernandez, that the club actually had to come out and put that photo of Fernandez on because people are calling bullshit on it. And people are saying, oh, like, Fernandez is out injured, blah, 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 blah. But does it really make a difference? Because he was never going to get a game anyway, was he?
I just think it puts to bed any kind of like fan, not unrest is too strong of a word, but like, you know, people just having an opinion that obviously it is fake or whatever, and there he is sitting with this kind of, what it's was like it?
Oxygen thing.
Oxygen
compression thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, for example, if he was fit, would he have started yesterday with Shea not being there? Would he have started? I'm not so sure. Would you have maybe played five at the back if he was fit? Like three centre half, sorry. You don't really know. You would have liked to have thought how would have picked him. Yeah. But to be fair, he has given Clark the nod every time he's had the opportunity to. So,
well, just while we're talking about Kieran Clark-Degger, so once again, he gets the nod, and let's dive straight into their first goal, something which he didn't do. Dive
it's
in.
A shame he didn't get the nod.
Exactly.
Yes, true, yeah.
Nodded clear, dear me.
Schoolboy stuff from Kieran Clark, letting the ball bounce. A lot of people were pointing the finger at Dubravka, but it's just over at Dubravka, to be fair. Then it bounces right in front of Clark, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And yeah, play out the back post, just ready to knock it in.
It's an absolute shambles, to be honest. I think, Christ, I mean, you're 5 minutes into the game here as well. It's so early on. You know, you expect to be tight, you know, surely you're going to be as disciplined as you can be, not taking chances early doors and things like that. And you know, I'm sure Bessie said it last week, and to be fair, we've probably all said it to the degree, individual mistakes. It's just on a weekly occurrence. And it always seems to be the same faces that are making these mistakes as well.
Yeah.
And I said this weeks ago about Kieran Clark, weeks and weeks ago, that he isn't good enough, and he's been a great servant. He's done very well when he's come in from as a substitute certain times of previous years. And thank you very much for that. But no offense, he should not be starting the Premier League game. That's just my opinion. And to try and I had a bit of a come together with me and Daz on Twitter. He had says no matter what, Clark's got to clear that. I thought, in my opinion, if Dubravka shouts keep us, he leaves it. That's my opinion. But having seen the replays, I don't see Dubravka say a thing, to be quite honest with you. So Clark has to, and as I've mentioned, you're 5 minutes into the game, let's just clear the ball and regroup and get up the pitch type of thing, you know what I mean? But to do that in the 6 yard area,
mate, even the position of Dubravka though, even with Clark's behind Dubravka, so even if Dubravka calls for it, it's a strange one. Clark's got to take responsibility for clearing that, because it's already gone. It's already gone past the keeper.
Well, the ball's coming. It's coming over Clark's head, isn't it? In fairness, let's just say Dubravka was physically standing behind him. Dubravka just catches the ball. It's as simple as that. I can only think that Clark thinks that the keeper's there, and because he literally ducks out the way as if like, oh, I'm getting a shout or I'm getting some kind of call.
He leaves it.
He really does. Yeah. But as you've mentioned, though, I mean, let's be fair, as I come back to what I said before, you're 5 minutes into the game, you clear that away. You know what I mean? You clear that away. And can I also just point out something that never really got mentioned by anyone? Dubravka led to the corner prior to that moment happening. Horrific. I mean, that's horrific. I mean, Lascelles passes him the ball back, and Dubravka tries to give it back. Lascelles goes out for a corner. I mean, the angle he had of that pass, you just don't try that type of pass here. Just clear it up the field. The ball then goes out for a corner. Then the corner comes in, they then recycle that ball, and then the goal happens. So there was two big errors there, to be fair.
Yeah, it's individual errors once again, though, Decker, like you said, and it's the same faces once again. And do you think in I know everyone's pinning the hopes on January now. Can you see there being that much of a change in the defensive lineup?
Well, we're going to need to go and buy a left back, aren't we? But that's got to be up to the top of the shopping list now, based on the fact that we haven't got a fit left back at the club. We've only got, well, I'm going to say it too, because I'll count Dummett in there as well. Dummett and Lewis. Dummett looks a long, long way off. Lewis is, they've said, until the new year. Now, I know that's only, 2 weeks away now, but whether that's like new year, as in he's going to be fit straight away at the beginning of January, or it's going to be, you know, the middle of January, something like that, we don't really know. So it is a position that we need to look at to do something there, whether that's a loan to try and just tide we're over for a little bit of time, because they think Lewis is the answer. I don't know, but it's maybe a position where we potentially weren't going to look to strengthen as a priority, whereas now it looks like it's somewhere that we really do need to look at.
It's a shame as well for Lewis, because he had a couple of decent games under his belt as well. That then obviously he picks that injury up, and that's obviously his run in the team gone now. And it leaves, like you said, Matt Ritchie back in there. And once again, to me, Matt Ritchie struggled once again.
I mean, he is up against the pace of Sterling, isn't he? that's one, you know, huge asset that Raheem Sterling's got over the majority of players is his out and out pace. But we, I mean, obviously we were there, Chris. We could see it, like, again from the off. You see with teams when we come across, when we're not playing with wide players, and they do, they just stick their players like right out on the touchline and leave them there, and they're in an acre of space every single time. And we got caught time and time again with just balls out wide because they were shifting the play really, really quickly. We'll come on to one which I think was maybe the last goal where it was even, you know, it went from one half to the other and completely switched sides. But that happened numerous times through the game. And we just, even with Murphy's got a bit of pace, but because he's, you know, he's coming quite narrow to the two central defenders, it again leaves space in behind. That was exploited. And when you've got players with pace that are that much better than us, let's face it, they're going to exploit that.
Yeah, Dick, I'm going to come to you because thank you very much, Josh. Josh has donated to the Super Chat. He's donated £20. And obviously, just on the back of talking about pace and Wien, obviously having, Man City having, and the players that are just way up against it in regards to a sprint, really. One of our players is St. Maximin, who was left on the bench. Rested, was he? Or God knows. So he says, "Hi, lads, hope you're all well." He's been critical of Alan St. Maximin recently and said he wouldn't last under Howe because of his ego. Do you see his long-term future with us if we stay up? Hope you all have an amazing Christmas. Awesome content. You too, Josh. All the best, mate. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Josh. Thank you. Is that a question to me? Sorry, is it?
Yes.
I'm a firm believer that the answer is yes, I really do. When you say long term, I mean, you're talking 5 years. I'm not saying five.
What's long term these days?
But yeah, but I certainly think if we stay up the next couple of seasons, I really do. I think. Are you all right? Oh, Lisa's just looking at you. No, she was. If I'm being really honest in regards to the opposition, I think you pick and choose your battles, if I'm honest. And that's why when I was at Liverpool game on Thursday, when we got there was loads of people around us kicking off that Wilson wasn't starting. But I was like, that's fine. Like, your players need to get a rest certain amount of times. And there's certain games where I think sometimes you've just got to accept probably going to get beat here. You know what I mean? You should never do that because I suppose it's still like a game of football. You've still got fans there. You should still believe. But I think there's horses for courses. Like, and I think resting Saint on that particular game, I think was a good option.
Well,
now, you could say resting or dropping because his form hasn't been great. Could be that as well.
I think it's Eddie Howe actually came out and said that he doesn't look at games in the future. He just looks at the next game. Mm-hmm. Is he lying a little bit there? Because yes, why would you rest a player?
100% lying there, yeah. I don't believe any manager that. It's always when they say, oh, we haven't looked at the table and things like that, or we don't look at teams around. It's complete and utter nonsense. They just say it just to sound focused and sound, you know, as a professional, I'm not quite sure the right word I'm looking for, but I think every player, every manager looks at games to come and realises, shit, we've got two or three games. They'll all know that these three or four games that we've got now are terrible, let's be fair. But I think Howell will be looking at the Everton game, the Southampton game, there's a few coming up that he'll think, God, can we wrap Saint and Cottonwell, can we rest Wilson here and there to see him for them games? That's what I think, anyway.
Yeah, your thoughts, Mark?
He did, you know, pick up a knock, maybe on Thursday night. He went off injured, so whether or not there's a little bit in that of just giving him a little bit of extra time. Nothing's been said around what that was, whether it was just a tiredness thing or what. But I don't know.
I mean,
it could be anything, couldn't it?
When he came on, it's very difficult with a player like St. Maximin because. Even Wilson, for example, he never touched the ball, man. And I've said this now for 5-6 games about Wilson. He doesn't touch the ball. But I'm not blaming Wilson for that. It's just because we're not very good, to be quite honest with you. And we don't really give... The commentators were saying very often about Wilson, saying he just hasn't had a kick at the ball. And I'm not blaming him for that.
He only gets the ball if he goes looking for it, mate, doesn't he, now?
Exactly. And when we put Saint up front on Thursday night, it's the same story. We're just lumping it along and hoping that he can be pacey and in and around a couple of defenders and cause some trouble. And Wilson's the same. Everything Wilson has to deal with is a battle for Wilson. There's nothing we're technically... We're never really giving him a chance. Do you know what I mean by that? But with Saint, when you haven't got the ball as often as you're not going to have against Man City, sometimes you could, you know, can you really have someone like Saint in the team in that regard? Because you know you're not going to have the ball very often. You've got a left back playing who's not a left back. And you've mentioned that them just stick their winger bang on the line. You've got their fullback bombing on for 90 minutes. It's pretty tough, I think, on Richie to have two to deal with all night. So,
That definitely showed as well in the second half. Obviously, we made the change. I know we're jumping like miles ahead here, but we did. We made the change at half time, and Saint came on, and that's when Richie was really under pressure. I mean, I turned to you, Chris, during the game. I think we were probably 20 minutes into the second half, and I went, Saint hasn't touched the ball 20 minutes, and he'd never touched the ball. It had gone nowhere near him. He'd never gone looking for it or anything like that. He almost looked like he was just wandering around aimlessly, just waiting for the ball to appear at his feet, which...
He did two wonderful moments, like where we nearly scored from. Like,
he did, one he did way, after that.
Wonderful
that,
moments. He ran from the right-hand side and just took loads, well, not loads of players, but he ran pretty much in a straight line, but he played a lovely pass through. I think it was Fraser who then tried to cross for Wilson that would have had a tap in, but credit to the goalkeeper, he read the play really well. And you know, we know he's going to have moments like that. I felt, well, apologise, actually. I went right at the end of the game there, so sorry. If we go back to the start, the first goal is a shocker, an absolute shocker. So, your thoughts on the second goal? Obviously, I have my own thoughts. What was your thoughts on the second goal?
I haven't seen it back, so I'm only going off of what I've saw in the ground. And from our angle, we're obviously just like Strawby corner side. It just looked like a fantastic strike for me. I haven't seen it back, so I'm not sure if Dubravka should do better. Obviously, Decker, you have. So
I'm not pointing any fingers at Dubravka there. Like, I think it is, as you say, Chris, a very good strike. Yeah. But Lascelles and Clark don't do themselves any favours.
So are you? So Willock and Hayden. Can we just comment here that that's our centre midfield, right? Willock was like a traffic cone, the way he went round Willock. Honestly. Horrific defending, right? I've never seen a player go around someone quite as easy as that. Honestly, I haven't. And then Hayden comes across. I think Hayden maybe loses his feet. You know, like he slips a little bit.
He slips, yeah.
He goes past two of them. He goes past them to that, not even there. Yeah. Absolutely unbelievable. And then
we'd actually been speaking about Willock during the game. He constantly fell over. He was slipping all over the place. And
you're right.
Actually, in the lead up to that goal, I thought he'd slipped again, but it wasn't. It was Hayden. But Willock just got left for dead. He just did a little touch around him, and he was gone.
Your point,
unlucky
about the two centre halves. I mean, Christ, you've got two centre halves here, right? Who aren't marking anybody. You've got a player coming towards him, and not one of them goes towards the player. I think the word Carragher kept using was engage. Not one of them, as he said it here, Carragher was Slayton. And he's correct, yes. None of them come out to engage the player. They allowed him to take him another touch and then another touch. And then actually leaned apart. They leaned apart.
Opposite directions, weren't they?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And
poor like Moses part in the ocean, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. It was. And I know Redknapp, I'm sure Redknapp was saying like, oh, you've got to credit the guy for scoring the goal. And do you know what it is? I'm going to say something now. If Maximum picks up that ball, right, and beats two players and then smashes one in the top bin, I'd be here with my pants off. I'd be absolutely ecstatic. But when it's your own team and you see that goal go in, it's very easy to rip it apart. Like, and it was diabolical, in my opinion.
It just like I said though, it just obviously the end product of that strike just it's always us that have these goals scored against.
Way he hits it as well. He like kind like you don't expect the ball to go the way it goes with the way he kind of makes connection with it. But like I say, it was a brilliant turn to lose Willock. Hayden's probably unlucky with the slip, and then but you've got to do better. You've got to do better as a defense against.
I think
that.
As a team. I mean, like, there's four players there for me that need to do better. I totally understand Lascelles and Clark are to blame as well, by the way. But as a unit, as a midfield and defence, I think you have to be much, much better there. When did the second goal go in? Was it about 20 minutes, maybe? I think, maybe? 17, 20 minutes?
Because obviously we still had that penalty shout in the first half when it was 2-0,
Because I thought, truthfully, I didn't think we played that badly, you know. We didn't. I thought we were all right. The first 20 minutes, I thought we were pressing them in the right areas. Joe Linton was absolutely magnificent the first 20, 30 minutes. Really, really good.
Joe had a good chance as well before they scored their second.
The long shot, like, went past the post.
Where he hits it from the edge of the box and it just goes wide.
Yeah.
That was
another game for me where Joe Linton is the standout player again.
I totally agree. There was a few times where, certainly in the second half, there was one where, oh, we're being a really good run, good move, sorry, right next to where you said, and he just passed it straight to the opposition. I was like, ah, but he didn't rest upon that. And again, he chased back. But I mean, he's playing centre midfield for majority of that game, and he was absolutely brilliant.
He looked comfortable, didn't he? He looked really comfortable. He was controlling that midfield quite a bit, where he was just getting the ball and looking up and thinking, right, I'm spraying it across here, then just moving the play to the other side of the field. Yeah. And honestly, have we finally figured out his position now?
He looks good in there, doesn't he?
It doesn't look bad, does he? I mean, the thing that
let's face it. If you put in a decent performance, you're gonna stand out in that team at the moment anyway, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think how physical he looks for me is brilliant. He's so physical, like strong players. Some players were just bouncing off him on Sunday. Like literally he was holding the ball up against twos, threes, but he's got good feet, you know. And in fairness, yeah, we have, even though we've been very critical of him at times, definitely I have been. The one thing I have said is that he does sometimes the hard things really well. Like he'll take it on his chest, he'll get it down, he'll pass it to someone. It's just them areas when he gets in the box, because he had a chance where I think in the first half where Wilson got it, he couldn't really get a shot off. He gave it to Joe Linton, and his first touch was poor, and he lost it. But I thought he was really good, Joe Linton. I really did.
Yeah, I thought Miggy as well. Like I thought he improved from last performance as well. Miggy, the thing with Miggy, yes, going forward, he is pacey, but I'm still struggling to find what he's contributing to the likes of chances created, because there's nothing really, is there?
Yeah, his energy yesterday was phenomenal. I have to be very, very, very fair here. Absolutely phenomenal energy. But there was two, maybe even three times that I remember off the top. Just now I'm thinking of the moments where his final ball was horrific. Really, really bad. And I'm not sure that it'll ever really improve. I think he's been here long enough now that I'm not really sure we'll ever see that. But the graft-wise and the work rate, his pace, his speed, his rushing opponents on the ball. Like there was one right in front of you again where he chased all the way back, nipped in front of him, and he got a foul. And then the whole crowd obviously erupted for just how hard he had worked backwards. But I commented on this last week about Saint was getting a stick. And I was like, I understand Almiron gets praise, but Almiron's equally doing nothing going the other way. I know he's working hard backwards, and everybody loves that because he's working hard, but he's a right attacking midfielder and it doesn't create a chance. So,
no, I'm with you.
It is, but he is being asked to do it completely. He's not being asked to be that out and out, like kind of a winger. He did play more central yesterday as well. So probably more in a like a centre of midfield kind of position, obviously with Fraser right and Saint on the left when he came in. He did play out on the right more of the first half, but I don't know.
Would you say, if he's running with the ball, let's say, and the fans are excited, you know, fans are up, and he's not through on goal necessarily, but he's got a chance to make the right pass or perhaps have a shot. Do you truthfully have any faith that he'll find that pass or he'll make the shot?
Not regularly, but
because
yeah,
I don't.
It's no, but I can say that about Saint as well. I can look at, yes, he'll run. He'll get me excited running at people, but there's lots of times we're seeing run down those dead ends, running.
There's a comment here by Max. He says he's got no right foot, so he always cuts in and defenders read it every single time. We saw that in the first half where Miggy finds himself in the box and he has a chance to hit it with his right and he just does a loop just so he can get it back on his left, and it comes to absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
It takes a touch and cuts back.
I think Miggy is a sort of player that if he's in a decent side, a comfortable team where we are winning games, he's probably a great player to bring on off the bench just to graft, basically. But that's it.
It's the same issues we've got both sides, isn't it? Is that you'd love to just be able to put them on that pitch and say, don't worry about what's happening behind you. Just you get yourself forward and get attacking and go and put their defence under pressure, which is what the luxury Man City had to do. They just left those wide players just standing out wide and just said, don't you worry about what's happening behind you. That ball will come to you and just get on your bike when it does. But
I think, you know, we're being criticism of Almiron and even St. Maximum to a degree in the final balls, but I mean, you sit and watch Man City. I mean, Sterling's one of the most wasteful players I've ever seen play football. Honestly, and I mean that. He is so wasteful. But he gets
so many 20, opportunities.
30 yeah. opportunities a game. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas St. Maximum gets the odd, well, five runs a game that he's got to try and beat three or four men. Or Almiron's the same. There was a few times in the first half where Almiron's picking the ball up and he's got five to beat.
Attention parents and students, we have an incredible exclusive offer from our friends at ProPrep. This is the perfect study tool for university students undertaking science, technology, engineering or maths related modules. It can even halve your study time. ProPrep provides bite-sized videos relevant to the module or course, which can be accessed from any device at any time. It has already helped over 500,000 students to pass their exams. They provide customized STEM study tools that match your syllabus. Long lectures are condensed into short and clear video tutorials. And after the videos can go through what you've just learned with interactive exercises and practice questions, so you'll be ready. You can even submit questions to the ProPrep professors and receive a video answer within 24 hours. ProPrep created a special offer just for our listeners. All you need to do is go to their website, proprep.uk/football, for more information. And our listeners can even sign up for a free 30-day trial right now. No credit card or debit card information is required. That's proprep.uk/football. ProPrep, the ultimate study tool. Now back to the show.
It's just not. It's impossible. Yeah. It's impossible.
We're saying that, but they did do it because, like you just said, even at that first half, I thought we were unlucky to be going in two down.
We had the
big chance. We'll come. Well, yeah, up so a huge talking
we'll,
point.
We'll go straight in, Mark, because obviously we're 2-0 down at this point, and Mark, me and you are sat complete opposite end to the ground to where that challenge is in the Man City box, and we know it's a penalty. The only way that that's never going to be a penalty is if Fraser dives, but obviously we're not going to see it from where we are. But clear as day, he gets taken out. And yes, the Man City player had control of the ball, but when was that a rule? When did that rule come in? It's a penalty all day long, and yeah. We were baffled, absolutely baffled in that ground.
I mean, I still can't believe it, despite watching it back a million times, listening to ex-professional referees, listening to ex-professional players. Every single person has said that's a penalty. Yeah. Even like Dermot Gallagher on Sky Sports, who he hates to say that the referees are wrong. He turned around and said they got it wrong. He then tried to justify why they'd made the decision, but he still said it was wrong. And I mean, like as you just said, Chris, we're at the opposite end. We've probably got the perfect angle of the view because we're right behind it as he's making that run, and he just goes up and I don't know whether
had the best view. Yeah, see.
I don't know whether he is slightly unsighted by the player in front. There's no excuse for it. There is a player just in front of him, but he can still see past him. He can still see it happening. The only thing I can think of, and I think this is what Dermot Gallagher said as well, is that their defender, I think, well, was it Cancelo maybe? He went away with the ball, and then the keeper came across and wiped him out. And he thought, oh, well, because if they go away with the ball, and they haven't got it under control, that's when it's not a penalty. But it's not as if even he was running through with the ball or anything, and then the keeper takes him. You know, so it's almost as if they've got two rules in the head, got them mixed up. But anybody with two eyes, you don't even need two eyes. You can have one eye and wear an eye patch, and you still give that one as a penalty because it's just so blatant, man, isn't it?
So, Degger, obviously, you watched this on the TV there, so you had the joy of the commentary on there. So, what was the verdict from? Was it Carragher that was commentating?
So, I always forget the name, sorry, of the actual commentator. He normally does all the championship games, if I'm honest with you. So, we'll probably hear a lot of them next season. He always does the championship games. He's you'll know his voice. So he does every single championship game going. I forgot his name. He said, cut immediately. That is a penalty, like categorically a penalty. The sort of the main commentator said, I think he was just trying to play devil's advocate. He was like, yeah, there's been contact, blah, blah, blah. But is it not because the player has run away with the ball? So there's no way Fraser can... that's right, of course it was Don Goodman's son. Yes, yeah, him. He obviously every game. And he said Stonewall penalty. I cannot understand that's not a penalty. Now, I thought, I'm not worried because it'll go to VAR. It'll be looked at. So I wasn't even worried, right? I was like, it'll be fine. It'll be all right. And then the longer it kept on going, a player went down pretty soon afterwards for quite a period of time. And Lascelles was obviously at the referee asking questions. And then the commentator came on and said, no, actually, it's not being looked at. Because they got that wrong at the time. But in that moment, they said it's not being looked at. I mean, for me, it's unbelievable how that's not a penalty.
So did it go to VAR, Degau, or not?
Well, they say it did, yes. And they came to the same conclusion that Cancelo, wasn't it, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
That because he's running away with the ball, Fraser was never going to be able to interfere with that ball or anything, so it doesn't matter. But to my point was, okay, then, so if Sterling's running past Murphy later on through one goal, can Lascelles just punch anyone he wants? Like, because he's not interfering with play? Like, that you just, well, you can't...
It's taking off the ball incident, isn't it?
Prime example, and what I said to Mark inside the ground there was, like, you get a corner, right? And a player gets his shirt pulled. Nowhere near the ball whatsoever. Yeah. The ball could be going the back end of the box and he's at the front post. If he's wrestled down on the ground or if he's pulled back, it's a penalty, even though he's getting nowhere near the ball.
Yeah.
So how is that not the same?
Absolutely right, yeah. It's also similar, you know, when you see a lot of players do this where they go around the goalkeeper. So the one-on-one with the keeper and they'll go around him. And the ball's going out for a goal kick. There's no chance that them can get that ball. But they make contact with the goalkeeper, very similar to the way Fraser did, and it's a blatant penalty. Do you know the referee getting it wrong, right, is bad enough. That's bad enough. But, you know, all right, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he didn't see it. Maybe he wasn't even sure about the rule, right? But when that goes to VAR and there's a collection of people in a room here looking at that, that is when it's absolutely out of order. And for me personally, and I really do mean this, they need football people as a VAR representative. I don't know who. I'm not saying Shearer, but they need some kind of football person because I just do not believe the people in charge of that job know. They don't know football. They just clearly don't. It's the only incident I've probably seen in a long time where every single pundit or ex-pundit or anyone has agreed that was a blatant penalty. Normally, there's always some arsehole that'll say it wasn't. Every single person has said. Did you watch the German O'Leary one? You said German Gallagher. Sorry, on Sky Sports, Mark.
Yeah.
So there was a very, very, very awkward silence after Dermot stopped speaking, and it went back.
He was asking about VAR, wasn't he?
Yes, the guy with the white teeth, I don't know who he is. He was literally in disbelief, like saying, what the hell? Like, how is that? I can't believe that wasn't a penalty. Now, in all fairness, right, would we have drew the game? Would have won it? We'll never know. I'm going to say we probably wouldn't have. But that doesn't matter.
That next goal's massive, though, isn't it?
It is. Of course it is. But the point that it's Thursday night was the same. Thursday night, we've got decisions going against it. And I'm not tinfoil hat time, whatever it's got. I'm not saying that, but... this is time and time and time again, we're seeing bad decisions. And what me worry is here, and I mean this honestly, when we are playing Watford at home or we are playing Southampton and it's 1-1 or it's 0-0 and we need that fucking penalty, I'm really concerned we're not going to get the decision that we require because just seeing bad decisions.
Well, we saw that with the penalty that we did get, which, you know, it seemed to take them 10 minutes to award a penalty, which, again, on the face of it, was very, very clear. Which makes it feel like they're almost trying to find a reason not to give it rather than to actually give it. Scott, who's a member of the channel, who's in the comments there tonight, sent me an interesting tweet earlier today, which I hadn't looked at these stats, but it makes for very, very interesting reading. So what he said was that this season Newcastle are sitting bottom of the leagues for VAR decisions for and against, where we've had -6 VAR decisions go against us. So we're sitting in a -6. So
is that including the likes of penalty appeals?
So penalty appeals, get for and against, offsides and stuff like that. The next team above us, he didn't say who it is, but I'm assuming it's somebody going to be down the bottom there, is on -3 decisions. So we've had double the amount of decisions given against us versus the next bottom of the league. And then you compare it to the top, Spurs are sitting in a +4 situation. So they've had 4 more given than against.
That's 4 yesterday, then,
Yeah. So it's Wolves. So he's just popped in the comment there. That's Wolves. That's the one above where. And then you've got Arsenal, which is on +3, and Chelsea on +2. So just looking at those figures, you're looking at the people that are sitting at the top of the league are the ones that are getting these results in their favour. The ones that are down at the bottom struggling, us, Wolves, who are thereabouts, we're getting them given against us on a total. Now, again, I'm not saying this is a conspiracy or anything like that, but it just seems that there's a lot of decisions going against us. It does seem to happen when you are in and around the bottom of the league that things don't go your way. But the key thing that you were saying there, Decker, about VAR is that this is meant to be there to use to help the referees, help the assistants, make sure that they're getting decisions right. It's not there to re-referee the game or anything like that, but when you see something as clear as that, then surely you've got to send them over to the monitor to have another look at it.
Yeah, that's the great point that as well, because I actually thought that. I thought, you know what it is, like, let's say VAR, you know, they don't necessarily say to the referee, you've got that 100% wrong and it's a penalty. At least get them over to the monitor. And in his ear, I go, right, let's have a look at this together. And is that a penalty? And the referee might look at it again and go, actually, you know, God, it was. I missed that. And that's fair enough. Yeah. Like,
Equally say, no, I think it doesn't matter there because of this. This has happened. But we don't have that transparency.
I think even if he goes over at the monitor and looks at that, if he hasn't gave a penalty because the Man City player has got control of the ball, he's not going to change his mind. Because exactly. The player still got control of the ball. It's just that's where it needs to be taken out of that referee's hands. And those running VAR need to go, it doesn't matter what your opinion is on right now, we are telling you by letter of the law that that is a penalty.
And as I've said, Chris, I said this last week or even the week before, I very, very rarely see VAR overturn a ref's decision. Because what I'll say to that is, if the referee had given that as a penalty, I don't believe VAR would say, well, Cancelo's running away with the ball.
Not a chance.
And that's where VAR is wrong, because VAR, for some reason, it'll just agree with the ref. Really, it'll just agree with the ref every time. It's just...
So on the back of, obviously, that the stats that Mark's been seeing and obviously the discussion that we've just been having, Luke Edwards put on this morning, I think it was, that Newcastle ought to make a formal complaint about the refereeing standards after the controversial decisions in defeats against Leicester, Liverpool and Man City. So the club are obviously putting a formal complaint and nothing will happen with that, nothing whatsoever. But I think without obviously putting a tinfoil hat on there and thing like a conspiracy, but it's obvious decisions for the likes of a football fan. And like we said, that one against Man City, we haven't saw a single person apart from Pep Guardiola saying that it's not a penalty. And it just speaks volume, apparently, yeah.
Well, why he gave his reason as to why it wasn't a penalty is what the referee said the reason wasn't given. So is that because Cancelo went away with the ball?
If that's the other way around, if that's
100%, he's shouting all day for a penalty,
It's a penalty. And the same against the same Liverpool, when Fraser went down, if that's the other way around, if Salah goes down, it's a penalty all day long.
I do need to, and I shouldn't because, you know, it's in the past, but... Here, Klopp at the weekend here, absolutely crying to his mum about this referee and how bad the officiating is. Where the fuck was he on Thursday night, can I say? Where was he on Thursday night? I've seen how bad the officials were. Honestly, I was boiling my piss listening to him today. Really was boiling it, like, because he was moaning on about the refs, this and that. And don't get us wrong, Kane is a disgrace. He should have been sent off. But it's unbelievable that managers are so blinkered, aren't they? Like, because as you say, if that had happened to Jesus, say, against us, he would have been gone mental, Pep on the sideline. It's just,
do you know what it is, though?
Just be honest.
If you're a manager, right, and you've already got the result, if that was me, I'd come out and say, yeah, we've got away with that one.
100%.
Like, 100%. It's not going to change anything.
I don't understand why they've got a lie. I cannot understand why they do that, but here we go.
It's that old Wenger, isn't it, if I didn't see it. That's the...
Wenger,
I'm sure Klopp came out with... No, it wasn't Klopp, sorry. It was the Spurs manager. He came out and with the old line, I didn't see it, Conte. He came out and saw he didn't see it at the time. He would need to see the replay. So, but the problem that we've got with VAR as well is these are the same people that are refereeing the game. If they're not on VAR, the referee in the game. If they're not refereeing, they're on VAR. Now, these referees all go through exactly the same training, all go on exactly the same courses. So if they're told one thing, of how to judge something, they'll all judge it in that way. The problem is we don't see that happening. We don't see that consistency.
I think it was Decker that said it, though, and it's a great point that how many is it? Is it three referees monitoring these, or three officials monitoring VAR decisions thereabouts? So why not have the likes of a referee involved, yes, but also people that have played the game? So have a player on there and have a goalkeeper in there as well, just for their opinions.
Well, why not just why don't ex-professionals become officials? Why can't an ex-player, once they retire, look into officiating and become refereeing? Because you've got to know the rules of the game, right? That's why the referees are paid professionals. I'm using that as a very, very loose term, but they are. They're paid professionals. They're paid to do that job. They're paid very well. So they're there to know the rules of the game, to know what's meant to happen, how it's going to go. What they don't have is what you're saying, the understanding of the game, how... you know, how the player, when players react and all that kind of thing. So you need to merge those two together. So whether that is, like you're saying, Chris, having a referee there and also having an ex-professional, somebody that's played the game, coming to that consensus, or you amalgamate and have that, somebody that's played the game to a decent level, that then, you know, rather than going getting coaching badges and stuff like that.
You're never going to have a player come and referee a game after the career has ended, because obviously... the wages, they're not going to get anywhere near as what they're at, and they don't have to. Like,
I mean, you're thinking, you know, looking at top level Premier League players, even Championship players don't. Yes, there's a percentage of them that earn very, very good money. Hey, referees are still paid a canny yearly salary, you know. So,
how Mike Dean does, Mike, how on earth? I can't stand that man, you know.
Yeah. Well, the ironic thing is he'll be probably the highest paid one.
Yeah, I think he is, isn't he? I mean, obviously, I know I made the point of like a footballing person being in them four walls to maybe offer an opinion or certainly hear what the refs are saying. You know, so when you know them say to that player, right, well, we're doing this decision because of that reason. It would be interesting to see what a person with a football mind or a football background would have on that. Mm-hmm. At the same token. You can only begin to imagine fans' paranoia of who's in that room and, you know, if it's Rio Ferdinand, God, he doesn't want Liverpool to win or whatever. Do you know, you'd have to pick and choose your moments on who you've got in, of course. But I genuinely stand by the statement that there needs to be someone with a football background in there helping with decisions.
That's a great shout by Scott as well, a member of the channel there. The one that gave Marky's stats earlier on says, would you welcome bringing in European referees? It's a shout. It is a shout, but just because obviously the European referees doesn't mean that's going to be any better. The thing is, the likes of VAR isn't the problem, because VAR works. We see it work. Obviously, Man City's goal, which got ruled out for offside, obviously that gets given. So it does work, but it's the people doing it, and it's always going to be opinion-based. And unfortunately, the penalty, we could sit here all night long and tell everybody watching and agree with everybody watching and listening that, yes, it's a penalty, a Stonewall penalty, and majority of the top clubs would have probably had that handed to them on a plate. But when you're like Newcastle United and you're down the bottom of the table, we've got to create our own luck. We have to, because we're not going to get anything like that. And it's probably going to go on for the rest of the season, where we're always going to be fighting an uphill battle. And this is going to be Newcastle United for a long time, unfortunately.
There's ways and means to help with the situation. I mean, we need to look at the transparency of the referees and assistants. We don't know why they make decisions. They aren't interviewed after the game. They can't be questioned on the key decisions that they've made, which leads to speculation. They don't wear mics or anything like that. So there you go. They're perfect timing. Whereas in some of the leagues, we're seeing it in the A-League. We know that it works over there. The decisions are made. It works perfectly well in rugby league. They're all mic'd up. You can hear what the decisions are, the conversations that are happening between VAR and between the on-the-field officials, and you get an understanding. Now, you might still not agree with the decision that you're making, but at least you understand why they've came to that decision. They're given their reasons, and then that gives you something to dissect, whether you think it's right or wrong. Another thing that we see is in the MLS. So they every week they do like in fact, I'm sure you can get it on YouTube, like basically a show where they look at the basically the refereeing, and they do the same. They talk through all of the decisions, so you get to hear all of the key incidents that they've that they've officiated over and why they've made the decisions that they've done from the horse's mouth. So you're not seeing it there and then, but at least you then can understand after the event why it's happened.
I think it's a shout, Mark and Decker. We've discussed this plenty of times, I think, over the years, because we always seem to obviously be on the back of these sort of decisions. Obviously, if you go back to the championship season with Matt Ritchie, that penalty fiasco under Rafa as well.
Burton.
So I think, yes, we all sit here and say it'd be great to hear the referee afterwards. It doesn't even have to be immediately after the game. Get them on like some sort of Sky Sports thing or something like that and explain why they've made those decisions. I would appreciate it and hearing it from them. But the reason why they won't do it, because a lot of the time they'll be admitting that they've fucked up. And that's why they're not going to do it.
Yeah, I think that's also true. And what I was going to say was I think a lot of them might be scared to do it live, you know, after the game. And because I think, you know, it's very easy for any fan to sit there and judge. People judge managers quite, or even players, when they've just played a match and they get interviewed straight after. And to be honest with you, a lot of the times I forgive what they say because you're in the moment, right? I'd be pissed off loads of times, right? And I would say something I probably regret. And I know you've got to be professional and all the rest of it. But as a referee, they may not feel comfortable. So what I would say to a referee is, don't worry, it's not going to be live. We'll even do a pre-recorded. And here's the five questions I've got for you. Get your answer ready and we'll see you later on. And it gives them time to come up with the answer if that's what they want to do. But I also think, though, it would be equally as frustrating because let's just say yesterday's decision, the answer would have been why you're giving it. Oh, because that player's running away with the ball and Fraser wouldn't have gotten it. That was the answer, and that's the answer we would have gotten, and it wouldn't have made me feel any better whatsoever.
I think in that instance, Decker, they could possibly get an example where the referee has gave the penalty, an incident like that where a player's never going to get the ball and say, but this occasion you gave it, so why is this one different than that one?
Yeah. Well, then they're fucked because then, as you say, exactly. then it's all holding their hands up.
And I think Morty makes a great point here, though, Digger. He says a manager can't even criticise a referee without being hauled in and fined. How did that ever happen? So when a manager is being honest and speaking the truth, so if Eddie Howe comes out and say, was it Mike Dean yesterday? No, it wasn't. It was the other one.
I forgot his name. Sorry.
I can't remember.
Our referee.
Yeah.
Yesterday, yeah. It was Mike Dean was Thursday.
Yeah, Mike Dean was at the Liverpool game. I can't remember. Yeah. But
it was Tierney was at the Liverpool game.
I can't
remember. Because that just reminded us, Klopp
was one of the well-known ones.
A lot of comments about Tierney and said he's not going to give us anything. So you can guarantee, as Marty's just saying there, is Klopp will get fined because he's had a go at Tierney and named him and said he's not going to give us anything.
What's wrong with, let's say if Eddie Howe comes out, and let's just take that Liverpool game for example and say that like Mike Dean got it wrong, he should be doing better, that's 100% of the penalty, the refereeing decision was wrong, it was a disgrace.
Yeah.
What is wrong with him saying that? Because it's correct, it's honest.
I totally agree. It's another way for the FA to be in their big castle and just hide away from the truth. They're just it's ridiculous, really. It really is, isn't it? It is wrong that you can be so, you know, you think of all the pressure that managers and players are under, especially teams down the bottom. The manager, I don't know how it isn't, but I mean other managers' jobs are at risk here. Your job is at risk that you could get sacked here on a decision that is totally incorrect. So in fairness, if the decision is incorrect and blatantly incorrect, you've got every right to kick off. You've got every right to say what you feel.
And that's why referees have got a hard job. They've got a really difficult job. But this is why VAR is there, to help them get the right decisions.
Yeah. And that's where it's even more frustrating. And that's why I'm more annoyed about it. I mean, how many decisions have we seen in the past before VAR where you go, fucking referees, hopeless, blah, blah, blah. Or the linesman's wrong. But when you've actually got physical video evidence to try and prove something is wrong or right, and you're still getting it wrong. What chance have you got?
Bring the mood up a little bit, Joe McClellan puts in the comments there that Craig Pawson was the referee doing VAR yesterday, and guess who is our manager, our referee against Man United? The very same person.
Well, we don't get off there talking about VAR because the third goal went to VAR, didn't it?
Yeah,
for the offside decision, which it just sums things up, doesn't it? But
it's such a soft goal, isn't it? I mean, when you see a goal like that go in, you think we could concede five or six a game. If that's the standard of defending we've got to offer here, we're in big trouble. Like
it is, all Decker.
It's such a soft
goal. I think right now, and obviously we found out today. Apparently, I don't think it's official yet, but if a club has 13 fit players and a goalkeeper, then they will be asked to play the Premier League games and the games will go ahead. I'm not sure that there's been God knows how many games called off over the last week, really. Yeah. Why were those games called off? And why now are they saying, oh, actually, if you can field 13 players, then it's going to go ahead. Right now, it's given some teams an unfair advantage, really.
I'm actually surprised because they had a big meeting, haven't they, about all that? All the Premier League clubs got
today,
together.
Yeah, apparently.
And
yeah.
I can't imagine the vote being in agreement for that decision, if I'm honest. I can't imagine that the teams...
By what we're reading, it doesn't look like there was a vote. It's basically the Premier League saying, no, we are ruling this one. But yes, the government could come out and overrule that and say, no, no sports, blah, 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 blah. But I'll put my neck on the line. I wanted a handful of the games to get postponed, but that was just for selfish reasons, just so we can get the January transfer window here before we play those games. That was me just being selfish for Newcastle United. I can see why the Premier League want to go ahead with them, because you've got World Cup coming up and it's just going to have a knock-on effect. And when will it ever stop?
Yeah, no, I do agree with you there. I think I'm looking on the... If you look away from our little selfish view of like, well, can we just get to January and all the rest of it? We've talked about that. But if you imagine we're going in against Southampton or Watford or even Everton, these games we've got coming, and you say Wilson's out, Saints out, Miggy's out, Dubravka's out, we're fucked. We're absolutely fucked.
We're fucked with them in the team now.
Well, exactly. So I was just throwing four names that I feel are better players, and that's incredibly unfair. Incredibly unfair. I don't get it. And every club will have the same opinion. I mean, Southampton will name four of their players and go, well, if we haven't got these, we shouldn't be able to play. But I think that's such a stupid decision to just go, well, if you've got 13 fit players, you're fine. That's like kids football, to be quite honest.
It's a good job we put four goalkeepers in that 25-man squad, isn't it? If anybody's got any questions, send them in. We'll go for another 10-15 minutes there, so just fire them across and we'll go through as many as possible. Scott says 13 players, what happens with head injuries? another talking point where over the game I think got stopped twice against Man City because Man City players went down holding their heads. It's just once again, and we haven't even touched on that, the VAR decisions and things like that, where the referee, that Liverpool game, he has to stop playing. Mike Dean, he sees it, even though he said that he sees it.
What's funny, I was driving back from the Liverpool game on Thursday, and I had said, I don't think I've seen live worst decisions, other than the Burton penalty, the one we've just said. But I mean, collectively, the worst decisions I'd seen in football was on that Thursday, and I didn't even have to wait 2 days until I seen arguably a worse one. I mean, that's unbelievable. Isn't it unbelievable to say that, isn't it?
And they both came in our game.
Well, of course. Not at Newcastle. We'll have any decision, any bad decision.
Matthew Murphy says, are you guys still set on Dubravka not being replaced? I think he's been poor of late. I'll go straight with this one because it was me defending Dubravka on social media against NUFC 360. It was one of the admins saying that Dubravka need replaced. To me, Dubravka is not our concerns right now. Far from it. I think there's other areas on the field that need huge improvements. And Dubravka, he's a decent keeper. Of course he is. He's got a mistake in him. Every single keeper has a mistake in him. But yeah, would you want to get a better goalkeeper than Dubravka? Of course you would. Of course you want to improve every single position to get better players, because that's how football works. But for me, I think it's harsh to see Dubravka has been poor of late. I think when you've got that absolutely horrific defence in front of you, there's not much you can do.
He still pulled off two fantastic saves yesterday. He's won us four more games than he's lost. Yes, he's prone to mistakes. You know, shows a goalkeeper that isn't. We saw that with Man City's keeper yesterday. He didn't have the greatest of games. But again, something we didn't mention, he pulled off a world-class save from Wilson's header in the second half, which was flying in. But there was umpteen times where his kicking was poor and things like that. But it's a pressure position. It's a position where, especially when as you've just said, Chris, playing in front of behind a back four like we've got at the moment, where you're getting peppered left, right, and centre with shots, where you're gonna come in for a lot of exposure. And I'm a lot more confident having him between the sticks than I am certainly Darlow and Woodman. Is he the answer long term? No. If we can go out and, you know, become a Man City, become a Chelsea, become even Arsenal, who go out and you can buy the best keepers that are out there and available at that time, we'll do that. But we're a million of miles away from it at the moment, and Dubravka is a good keeper for me.
I probably echo everything you just said. To be honest, I think some of the games that he's played, I mean, some of the saves he did yesterday were unbelievable. There was one he did from a header from point blank range, was absolutely outstanding. And as a shot stopper, he's almost unrivaled as a shot stopper. I don't know if there's many better than him. The problem is he has to save 5, 6, 7, 8 a game. That's a problem. The one area that he's nowhere near as good as I thought he was, and maybe I give him too much credit, was his distribution and his actual ability on the ball. Mm. I thought when he first came, I'm going to point at Man United at home again, where it was the greatest debut I've probably ever seen from a goalkeeper. He looked unbelievable on the ball, you know, rolling it along his studs, finding the ball, finding the pass. I don't see that at all at the moment. Now, his distribution at Liverpool was horrific, to the point where I actually thought he might be injured, had a bit of some problem because his kicking was just so poor. But it's just, I mean, look at the goal that they scored when the heads were down. He still saves the first attempt. Unfortunately, it goes straight to Jota and he scores.
I think it's right what you're saying, Tiger. Distribution, it's shaky at best. It is shaky. And like you said, a great example when Lascelles passed it back and then you try to pass it back to Lascelles and just goes nowhere near him, goes out for a corner. But to me, I think it always comes down, like Mark said, that pressure situation that the keeper finds himself in. And having that back four once again, which is a championship back four at best. And I think another touching point on Dubravka is when he collects the ball, if he comes in the 6-yard box and collects it, picks it from a cross or a corner, he does try to get that ball out pretty quick. But to me, there's so many players with back to ball that just don't want to take it out of defence for me. There's not many people or players confident enough to do that, which means Dubravka's then just got to lump it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think as well, you see Dubravka sometimes almost going to ball out, like start the move off, but he's like, oh, actually, you're a bit under pressure. Whereas Shelvey, and Saint necessarily, but definitely Shelvey, he will give Shelvey the ball when he's under a bit of pressure, because I think he believes Shelvey will be okay. But would you want to pull it out to Lascelles? Would you want to give it to Clark? Would you want to give it to Hayden necessarily under pressure? I know I wouldn't. I'll be honest, I wouldn't. So
because you mentioned Shelvey there, I'll come to you, Mark. Huge miss, and I don't think I'd ever say that. Huge miss, absolutely huge miss in that midfield.
It's lovely, yeah. Chris. Say that again.
I mean, we know he's one of the most comfortable on the ball, probably, you know, the most comfortable on the ball in the team. I haven't seen anything said as to why he was missing, unless I've
injury. Just picking up injury in training, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad one, but it was like a strain or a precautionary
He was injured and somebody else. I pick up a knock and they said that non-COVID related. That's what they said when the club released it.
That's right. Yeah.
So hopefully it's not going to be, you know, too serious.
Was that illness? Was somebody out because of an illness? Was that not Shelvey?
I don't think it was.
I read it. Another player that said illness and then it said non-COVID related next to it. I'm not sure who it was.
It's probably exhaustion of the amount of work he's actually done in the last couple of weeks. He hasn't been used to it for the last 15 years of his career.
Next question. I'll come to you, mate. Stu says it. Is it realistic to sign good players on loan to buy deals if we stay up? I know there was a lot of people that saw Wijnaldum up for grabs recently. Is somebody like Wijnaldum, that's somebody that you'd bring in on loan with the potential to buy, like that sort of player that's at a top team, that's not getting game time? I don't necessarily mean Wijnaldum, but his situation where he's a decent player, just not getting the game time.
I'd go and drive over to Paris now. Honestly, I would. And bring him over. I mean, this
because the borders are closed in France because of COVID.
They'll let us in. But no, I mean, a player of that stature and that much quality, I mean, God almighty. I mean, you know, he's not going to come to us, is he? But I totally take the point. I mean, there's Lingard's another one. Even Redknapp mentioned Lingard on Sky. Again, so saying Lingard's
the first player that we should go and get, isn't he?
So he, you know, no offence, they normally don't say things as clear as that if they don't know some kind of rumbling. If I'm being brutally honest, though, if I had to try and be negative about the window, I would be happy if we just sorted the defence out and didn't strengthen a single other area. I'm going to look at the glass sort of half full here. They're half, half empty, however you look at it. Whereas I know people want Lingard, they want another striker, they want a left back. We're all going to get Trippier. Trippier looks like he's done, right? Can we keep, you know, we're going to see what we've got.
But because you mentioned Trippier, there's a few questions about Trippier came in. A lot of Newcastle fans turn their noses up at the likes of Trippier coming along. Absolutely baffling. This is what money has done to us. It's made some fans be like, nah, he's not good. And if, we've got Emile Crafty at the minute.
It's unbelievable. You've got, we're playing Jacob Murphy there. That's who we've got. That's the answer here. Mm. So you've got an England national who has just been working with Diego Simeone for God knows how long, right? Okay. A fantastic defensive-minded coach who can obviously definitely been coaching him well. The guy is unbelievable at set plays, set pieces, dangerous free kicks, corners and stuff like that. Got bags of experience. I mind boggles. The mind boggles if people don't want him in. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Link with some teams in the Champions League as well, mate. So if Newcastle have managed to pull this one off, credit to them.
Unbelievable, mate. Unbelievable. And that would be... Oh, it's just an unbelievable... I want statement of intent, but it's certainly a statement of like quality intent. It's not just wasting money either. You know what I mean? He would be an amazing... In my opinion, I know people are on about his age and stuff like that, but listen, for me, you get him in the door. But if it's possible, you get him in. But to go back to that point is like everybody's on about Lingard, Dele Alli possibly. There was a striker I heard mentioned the other day, and I'm like, yeah, that's amazing. I'd take them all. But he's going nowhere in January. Oh, well, there we go. So he's off the cards.
Yeah, apparently Lingard said the day that he's going nowhere in January, but... Yeah,
for me, personally, I still would love a centre midfielder. I have to throw that one in there. But if we could strengthen the entire back line, to imagine you could get not four Trippiers. I mean, the stature or calibre of player as a Trippier across your back four in January, you take that and I would still be comfortable. We've got enough at the top end of the field to cause trouble. I still believe we have. I really do. It's just defensively, we're just shipping goals left, right and centre.
If we can get our back four organised and strong, it gives you that foundation to build on, doesn't it, and not have to worry. And then, you know, as we said earlier on in this podcast, that it allows those players that we want further up the field just to concentrate on that, to get forward, to look after the attacking business end, rather than having to worry about what's going on behind them and constantly having to track back and all of that kind of thing. So
I've seen Shane's point there about Dele Alli. Just obviously, I know I've been very, because I don't like him, to be honest. I've said this to you many times. However, well known
that you don't like Dele Alli, Decker.
I noticed a comment there about his performance yesterday and consistency, something he does struggle with. But again, I mean, Alex Ferguson said he was a player that he was, there's Gaza, Shearer and Dele Alli was the three players that he wished he had managed. There's a player there. There is a player there. But my concern would be if he can't produce or want to produce at a club like Tottenham, is he going to want to come up here and really want to do well? I'm not so sure, personally.
That's where attitude comes into it massively, isn't it? You've got to be able to come into there, be up for the fight, want to, you know, play for the team. So, yes, in the loan market, I think it is probably our best avenue, because not only does it protect us, it protects the player, because if the worst is to happen and we do get relegated, then the players... some of them aren't wanting to go and stick around. So if they can come and just say, well, we'll stay till the end of the season, if we stay up with them, we can reevaluate it. If you can go down, I can walk away. It's a win-win situation for them. There's less risk there.
It's going to be difficult from both sides. It's very, very difficult transfer window for Newcastle United, because obviously the position that we're in, clubs selling players know that our pockets are deep, very, very deep. So I've got a horrible feeling about this one, that most likely we're probably going to have to shop abroad. You can see it coming. I can't imagine any of the rivals looking at selling players to us. The shouts for Connor Cody. I would love Connor Cody at this football club. Of course I would. I think he would have a similar sort of impact that Morgan had for Leicester, just being that leader and basically dragging performances out of average players. And I will mention this before about Lascelles. To me, we need a change from bottom right the way to the top with that squad, and club captain is one of them for me as well.
It is. I don't know if someone put it on, but I would take Nathan Ake in a heartbeat.
Ake, yeah.
100% if he's available. I don't know if he is or not. But he I mean, God almighty.
He's not getting the game, is he?
Oh, so comfortable on the ball. How's worked with him before? I mean, he went to Man City for, what was it, 50 million or something like that. The guy's an absolute talented footballer. Don't get us wrong, he has a mistake in him. He has a mistake in him, but as we've touched on my goalkeeper, every player has a mistake in him. That's just what it is, right? But Aki would be tremendous. It really, really would. And Connor Cody would be brilliant as well. And to go to Lascelles' point, I mean, he's just not good enough, is he? He's just not good enough. I mean, having said that, right? I don't think it would be, but I'll try and be nice. Let's say you got Aki in there, you got Connor Cody. Would Lascelles become a better defender because he's got someone stronger alongside? For example, did he look better because he had Lejeune alongside him? The times when he looked decent, you know, I'm not so sure. But could a better right back who was playing alongside Lascelles and then another centre half make Lascelles a better player? I don't know, but you know, I still believe the full four needed to change. The whole four.
That ship sailed for me now. Like I think there's no way back for Lascelles. I think if if he isn't replaced in January, then he'll be replaced in the summer.
Yeah, I would agree there. Yeah. So if you go down, he won't be.
How many weeks do we sit here and say the defence needs change? And it's every single one of those defenders. Every single one.
Do you think as well though that brings a lot of pressure on them because them know that them will know. That them like Trippier, Murphy will know Trippier's coming in. Mankey will know that. They know they're conceding 30 odd goals a season. They know that so far this season. They know everybody's opinion is when you get strength and defence. I just feel as if some of the players must go on there as a defender thinking, fucking hell, my days are numbered.
I would imagine that a lot of those players would be happy to play a second fiddle.
Well, possibly.
But if they are, we don't want them at the club because if you have enough belief in your ability, you will look at that as a challenge, right? You want to bring another right back in, then they're going to have to get me out of the team. I'm going to play like this. I'm going to play like that. They've got to take my position off me. Now, if they don't have that attitude or they don't have the performances to back them up, then get them out of the team. Simple as that. Mm. If you are good enough, you stay in the team.
I think the only one which I'd be happy at keeping, I'm not talking about starting, but potentially it is probably Lewis. I still think that there's something left for Lewis to give, and to
me. You've still got a squad, haven't you, mate? You've still got a squad, you know what I mean? So I totally agree that you would maybe buy another left back, whoever it may be, and Lewis would be the backup, and maybe them two just jostle for that position, then fight it out, and the better player over the months to come gets the position. That's just the way it is, you know?
And that's what you want, competition.
Yeah, of course you do. And like right back, I mean, so you're going to have Trippier, Matt is Mankio, Kraft, for example, one of them. Kraft. You can't have three right backs, can you? Well, you can, but I mean, let's be fair, a club like us probably isn't, because we're not in that many competitions. But maybe is that Kraft's day's number? Is that Mankio's day number? You don't know. But
so it was actually Mankio who was the other player who had an illness that who missed the game. But it's like I said, it's going to be difficult and difficult for a lot of reasons in January. I'm confident that we'll bring players in. I've got no concerns about bringing players in. It's just what sort of player we can attract at this moment in time.
Key to who we're going to bring in is, do they fit into how Eddie Howe wants to play? Because, you know, as much as I think Connor Cody's a great defender, a great leader, is he the type of player that would fit into Eddie Howe's preferred centre-back? For me, probably not, because he isn't as comfortable on the ball. He isn't as comfortable playing out from the back. He's certainly better than what we've got there. I'm not denying that. But from a way of being able to pick that ball up from Dubravka, be comfortable on it, take it forward, find a pass and that kind of thing, he's not on that list.
Well, yeah, I probably agree with you there. I did want to comment, I don't know if anyone has in the comments because I can't see them, about Dan Ashworth from Brighton, the technical director. Obviously, we're in talks with him
today. We've been given
permission to speak to
permission.
Him.
And we've gotten Liverpool's
guy as well, isn't it?
Sports scientist guy, wasn't it? Analysis.
Is that the one Paul Merson was saying that we haven't got a clue about? Was it him? Because we've given him a higher role, haven't we? We've given him a higher.
Yeah, he got promoted.
Was it him?
He got promoted the Liverpool. Yeah, he was a. An analyst at Liverpool, and he's now came in to take the senior role here. So
something like that, that's right. And because Klopp mentioned that, saying, "Oh, like he goes when he goes well," and it was a higher position, you know, it was a progressive position. That's why he's gone type of thing. And I'm sure it was Merson that was having a go. But you know, the point is the pieces in the jigsaw, they're getting the players. The people that they want in place, which again I think is a positive. And this guy from Brighton, for example, comes with a great reputation. Yeah. So
filling desks, that's really good.
Well, what's to say he's the answer? He could just be one in a, you know, in a line of interviews that they're wanting to do. We know they did this process with the manager. I assume they've done it for the sports scientist role as well. So because we've had three or four names that were linked, and you know, it was day on day. It was like, oh, this person is going to get it. All the ITK accounts were saying, yeah, it's all. Was it the guy from Chelsea? The other Michael. One from Liverpool that is retiring at the end of this season and stuff like that. So, you know, it could just be a person that we're wanting to talk to, just to, you know, see whether it is somebody that we want to go through. It could just be an interview.
One of the questions has been asked in earlier on, and I've just remembered then, I will end it on this one, is the likes of squad morale if we start bringing players in, because of course our wage structure is going to get absolutely torn apart, absolutely cut in half, the likes of the wage bill. Is that going to cause unrest between a lot of your senior players in the team now?
I'm going to say no.
Do you think they'll see that as an advantage thing? Right, let this contract run out, then I'm going to negotiate a bigger one.
Yeah, because I think, I really feel surely they're clever enough to understand what we are, where we are, right? We are terrible. and the quality of player we're going to bring in, they're no doubt then would have been behind closed doors in their WhatsApp groups, would have been whinging about the whole structure of the club, the wage budget, the everything that we had as a club. Then would have known that obviously the players were going to sign when the opportunity arises, they're going to be for big money. They would have known that. And I think if I was a player, I'd be saying, right, if I can show what I can do here, my next contract could be quite a lucrative one for us. That's how I think they'll look.
That's if they start to perform, because right now,
of course, yes,
there's a reason that they're not picking those sort of wages up, because they're not good enough to get those wages.
Totally agree. No, that's right.
And those that are on decent wages here will be on decent money, and if they're good enough, then they can get new contracts. They can stay, they can hang around, and their terms will improve. It's the way football is. You know, you've always got that scale of salary, and if you're one of the best players at the club, you get paid the rewards. You'll get a pay rise. You know, we've seen it even like Saint got a new contract last season as well after his performances. We'll see. If you're doing well, we'll want to keep you. We'll improve your terms. If you're not doing well, you'll not be in the team.
Difficult for where you sit, if I'm honest. But this was obviously the first game back without the signs. Obviously, the Sports Direct signs was...
Mate, even no matter where you sit in that ground, you can tell that they've gone.
Tell.
Yeah. We talked about it, didn't we? It's weird because... It's
obvious now.
Yeah.
Seeing how many Sports Direct was, because there's just whiteboards up now. So it's more obvious now. It's like you're thinking you can shit like the leases end.
Yeah,
more.
It was two boards, wasn't it?
There was two boards that were still full, and that was it. But like, not Sports Direct. It was a Castor.
It was only two in the entire stand. Two boards that weren't blank, and they had Castor on. So every other board that we could look at from our end was a Sports Direct board.
Yeah,
so it just shows you how much was there.
Yeah, there's been.
But
some
it does look very bare. It's weird.
Yeah, of course. It'll be clattered with something else soon enough, I'd imagine. I've seen some fantastic photos, obviously, online of it all, and it's just amazing. I mean, I know things aren't going well on the pitch, of course, we're struggling, but it really, I'm sure I said this to Chris when it happened, that was the day for me that would be as if our club was back again, and it was our club again type of thing with his sort of graffiti gone. And the photos just look amazing. It just takes me back to being a kid, to be honest with you. It really does when I look at
I even noticed the steward's jacket had the little stickers taken off the back as well. So the stewards in the corner had the Sports Direct stickers off.
Brilliant.
Because have they got them new? Will they have them new coats, or will they still be on there? But they were gone.
It's great. And like I said, no matter where you are now in that ground, you can tell that they've gone, because it just looks blank. But that's a good thing. It looks like a game of FIFA. That's what it looks like. It looks like you're playing St. James Park on FIFA. That's what it looks like. And like you said, it's a joy, mate. And things aren't great on the field. Of course they're not. But like you said earlier, Decker, it's just another bit of the jigsaw. It's the simple things which we are appreciating that the new owners are doing for us.
And something, I'm going on here, but 4-0 down, flags in their way in there, when we were 4-0 down. There's no fans in the country do that, and I really hope the players, certainly Eddie Howe and Amanda, and that I'll say that and think, fucking hell, we have to get this right for these fans, like, because that was an amazing sight considering the
results. To be there, mate, it was amazing. It just started with one kid just stood up and started waving it. Then you just saw little pockets come up. Then even the big flags came out as well. People walking by, putting them up, and Eddie Howe's Black and White Army. I've never heard it so loud. You're 4-0 down, full time whistle goes, and the thing that pissed me off about it was the guy in the sound booth starts playing "Do They Know It's Christmas" over the top of the fans, and I thought, "You've ruined it. You've absolutely ruined that atmosphere there," because it was loud and it was getting louder the closer I got to the full time whistle, and I think. If they had not put them on the music, it would have looked even better on the likes of the broadcasting as well. Because, like you said, Digger, nobody else does that. And I'm not being big-headed here. No other football base does that, fan base does that.
No. And it needs to be like, you know, I thought with the being on Sky and stuff like that, I really thought that surely even the Alexi Redknapps and Carragher's Defoe, who all of them in the box, who probably hate it, to be quite honest, even them must be looking and thinking, that is incredible support. It really is.
Showcase, we are showcasing this club for what it can be and what it hopefully will be. And the fans are a huge part of the reason why this takeover went through. It was the fan base. We were probably the only shining hope in the football club, really. Let's just hope we'll see more of it. I think we will. I think no matter what happens this season, I think we will see that.
Even Pep came out and mentioned it at the end, like, how good the fans were, and, you know, commented that you don't see that, and that what an asset we are, and that this club is a massive club, and hopefully things will work out for them. So, which, you know, we've sort of became allies with Man City, like in our defiance of the league, and I don't know, our Gulf money together.
Yeah, we're going to call us
oil money here, oil allies.
Yeah. Like the Legion of Doom, right? Yeah.
So. Right, boys, it's been an absolute pleasure. 1 hour and 15 minutes of your evening gone, so we'll let yous go. Thanks everybody who has tuned in tonight. Thanks everybody that is listening to the audio back over. And if you do want to jump over to YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like the video, and you can become a member. As always, you get access to early features on there, and you get a code to get in the Telegram group as well, which you can have a bit of interaction with everybody associated to the channel on there. Listen to Roger's voice notes. Why would you not want to join that group? Boys, we'll probably won't see each other till after Christmas now.
I know.
So
yeah. Have a happy Christmas, you know. Everybody. Yeah. Everybody
have a good Christmas, you know. But yeah, it's been a pleasure, boys. Another one out the way, another year done. Onwards and upwards for us.
Not quite. We've got a week between Christmas and New Year, haven't we? So
we'll see if we're in a fit state to do them then. Right. See you later, boys. Thank you very much.
Cheers. All the best, everyone.
All the best, everyone. Merry Christmas.
Die Hard's a Christmas film.